Well, it seems like it was somewhere back in eternity. And we look ahead and it's forever. And if we've lived it, you know, it was like yesterday. And I'm sure that on August 7th of this year, when I think back 50 years to when I had lunch in that mine, it's going to really seem just like yesterday. To explain a little bit of how I happened to be there at that particular time, I might say that I was born into a family that loved the outdoors, and we spent a lot of time hiking, camping, climbing mountains, and so on. And in 1933, I had done a solo backpack trip of 123 miles on the Wonderland Trail around Mount Rainier. I'd spent a month up there hiking, and this was the last week of it. And that really inspired me to want to get back into the real wilderness. I wanted to get back into the North Cascades, the North Cascade Primitive Area. I'd thought of this for a long time and had spent quite a bit of time in the Mount Baker National Forest anyway. I knew I couldn't go there alone, so I started looking for a hiking partner. And I found one finally on Mount Baker, another school teacher. And after hearing my adventures on Mount Rainier, I finally sold her on the idea of going with me. And I think I am going to stand. I think maybe I'll be more comfortable seeing all of you. And her name was Dorothy Isaacs then. She's Dorothy Spoon now. And I might say she comes to Holden Village. And last year we gave this particular talk together. And in fact, we've given it a couple of times together. And it really goes better. But I do have one thing this year that I didn't have then. I found my diary from the trip that we wrote while we were traveling. And so I am going to be reading some excerpts from this from time to time. Dorothy and I sat down. I'm going to call her Dot, since I'm a Dorothy too. We sat down with some maps, a map of the Mount Baker National Forest and the Chelan Forest and the Wenatchee Forest, and sort of worked out what would be approximately a three-week backpack trip. And our real goal and objective was the Whatcom Pass Primitive Area, which is just south of the Canadian boundary. And we wanted to take off from near Mount Baker and parallel the Canadian boundary over to the Skagit River and come down the Skagit to Diablo Dam, then backtrack around Diablo Lake and go up Ruby Creek and up the Granite, which incidentally is now the North Cross State Highway. At that time, it wasn't even thought of to be there. It was intended to be somewhere else. And then we come over Rainy Pass and down the Bridge Creek, down the Stehekin, to Stehekin. We had an alternate plan. We weren't sure whether we were going to go come back over Cascade Pass to Marble Mount, or whether we would go from Stehekin across to Lucerne and come through Railroad Creek Valley and over Cloudy and Sioux Attle Passes and out the Sioux Attle that way back to civilization. But at any rate, roughly, that was our trip. So, of course, what we had to do next was to go to the Mount Baker National Forest Supervisor and lay out this plan with him. And he looked it all over and he said, "It's fine. This is all very good. I don't see any problems but one. You should find some other route to the upper Skagit country than the North Cascade Primitive Area." We said, "Wait a minute, that's what we want to be in. We're just, the other is just the before and after. It's the North Cascade Primitive Area that we want to see." And he said, "That country isn't open." He said, "That is really wild country up there. The only fire trail through there has not been maintained. It hasn't been touched for at least 4 years. Incidentally, folks, there are some chairs over here. And he said, in addition to that, there was a silver thaw last winter. And I don't know if you know what a silver thaw is, but it's when temperature gets at a certain point where ice forms totally around everything, every little twig and tree, and it will snap telephone poles, trees, power lines, and anything, it will snap them. So he said there's been a silver thaw in there and a blowdown to boot, and it's all under timber. Well, you know, the more he talked, the more he sold us on that trail. That sounded like we wanted to get really back in the wild. So he said, well, you think about it for a few days and then come back and see me. So we did. And we came back just, we really convinced each other, you know, while we were out. That was fine. We walked along as if we had to. And well, he also said, there's no telephone line in there. You see, in those days, the Forest Service strung telephone lines on the trees. This was their communication. They had the old crank phones, you know, and all the lookouts and guard stations had these phones, and you know the number rings in order to reach a certain station. But the telephone line was really a good help to a hiker, because if the trail was bad, you know, you just follow that phone line. As long as you see that phone line, you know that you could get out. You weren't lost. And he said, no phone line in there. There's no guards, nothing. And for about 50 miles, he said. Well, we were still sold, so we went back to see him. What we didn't know was that he had taken the precaution of starting a trail crew in there. I think maybe he wanted to brush out that trail anyway. And we gave him a good excuse to get started. But he didn't tell us that. He was still trying to talk us out of it. And we said, no, we really, that's the way we want to go. He said, all right, I'll give you 11 days to get through there. And then I'm sending in a crew with shotguns. And you know, I haven't figured out to this day what that was all about. Well, the next thing, of course, when he said, all right, we could go, was to plan food and what we were going to take with us. We traveled very light in those days, not all the fancy stuff that you have now. No tent, no ground cover, nothing like that, no stoves. We had, and I'm going to read from my diary. I explained before some of you came in that I found my diary of 50 years ago, and we'll read some excerpts from it. We carried with us our sleeping bags, and mine weighed 11 pounds. It was a wool bag, and that was a real good bag. First aid kit, mess kit, flashlight, miner's candles, Kodak film, binoculars, hatchet, hunting knife, fish hook and line. We carried a towel, a washcloth, soap, toothbrush, toothpaste, one change of underclothes, extra wool socks, a pair of shorts, and a bandana handkerchief, which we discovered was the most useful article. We wore slacks, a blouse, we had a sweater, and a windbreak. And that was the total of our trappings. I used a Trapper Nelson pack board. I don't know if anybody knows what those are anymore. I still think it's very good. And Dot carried a pack sack. The trip covered 3 weeks. We went to the hike shack in Seattle because we decided we were going to use dehydrated food. They did have it in those days. It wasn't as good as what you have now. We put together dehydrated foods that were potatoes, vegetable soup, onions, milk, and eggs. The milk took forever to mix, incidentally. We carried a pound of bacon each week. Then also we had oatmeal, rice, milk hardtack, rye crisp, butter, salt, sugar, pancake flour, dried fruits such as pears, apples, raisins, peaches, prunes, and then tea, coffee, and chocolate. We divided the food into 3 portions, taking 7-day ration with us, which totaled to 10 pounds divided between us, only 5 pounds of food apiece to carry. and having the remaining two portions mailed to us at the only two post offices that we would contact on the trip. One was Diablo Dam and the other was Tehachapi. Now, let's go through a bunch of pages here pretty fast. We've got to watch our time. The beginning of our trail was Silver Fir Camp. We had transportation to there, and we hiked in that night. We actually left on the trail at 5:55 p.m. and hiked 6 miles that night to the upper Ruth Creek area where we slept out. The next day, we went over, climbed up into Hannigan Pass, which is really a very beautiful scenic place, and then dropped down to the Chilliwack River. The Chilliwack drains into Chilliwack Lake in Canada. And that day we hiked as far as the U.S. cabin, which would be the last stopping point before you go into Canada. And there, much to our surprise, we found three gentlemen, Dean Brown, Walter Nielsen, and Archie Lunger. They were the trail crew that Mr. Pagder so kindly sent in. And they had been working up there. Well, they entertained us that evening. They did invite us to dinner. Maybe I should tell you what they fed us. They fed us cornbread with strawberry jelly, rice and corn croquettes, sweet potatoes, pork and beans, sauerkraut, peaches, and several cups of coffee. And while they were doing that, they were entertaining us with what our trail was going to be like. We didn't believe a word that they said. How would we get across the Chilliwack? Oh, yes, they put a log in the other day. Oh, of course, it was a bit wobbly. You see, it rolls when you get out about halfway. But that's all right. We anchored it at one end, so it isn't quite so bad. Well, we want to know how big it was. Well, it's about 6 inches wide. And they chipped it flat on the top. Oh, they also peeled it, too. And it might be kind of slippery, but they thought we could stick on with caulks. And then, of course, the creek they described as just a raging torrent if we should fall in. And then, of course, there was another stream we'd have to cross. And they said there was a bridge there, but not any longer. Only part of a bridge now. And the lower side has fallen until it slants like the roof of that cabin over there. And then they went on to describe the trail as being terrible and no scenery at the top of Whatcom Pass. Of course, we didn't believe a word that they said. But we found out that they had exaggerated a bit as far as the log and the bridge were concerned. But they also had described the trail as being full of nettles growing over our heads. We'd have to walk on our hands if we wanted to escape them. And that part was fairly realistic. Well, we made it that day to the summit of Whatcom Pass. And we're richly rewarded because it really was a beautiful sight. And let's see if I can find my description of the pass. We got to the pass at 4. It was breathtaking. There before us lay the whole Weber Valley, mountains as far as we could see. To our right, the beautiful Challenger Glacier and the Pickett Range. To our left, more rocky peaks, and one big glacier high up between two peaks, with a drop-off for a thrilling slide. But not having ambition right then, or energy, to climb the 3 or 4 miles at least, to reach it, we were content with a snowball fight on a nearby patch of snow. And then behind us lay the valley that we had just come through, winding back between the mountains to the Chilliwack. It was truly very beautiful. Of course, we explored and looked for mountain goats and were fascinated with the beautiful rock types and so on that we saw there. There was just one thing that was bothering us, and that was some black storm clouds started rolling our way, and they seemed to roll by, and so we rolled our sleeping bags on the heather and found that that was nice and springy, made a good mattress, and we had a good night's sleep. But these clouds, intermittent clouds in heat and heat lightning, flash lightning in the east, sort of plagued us all through there because we realized we were in an area that was very bad and that it could be quite a catastrophe if there was a lightning strike and the fire got started in there. We would have been pretty helpless. The next day, this is the fourth day, July 25th now that I'm into, and we get on the trail going down now. No more trail crew. First, the switchbacks. There were, someone claimed there were 94 switchbacks going down from Whatcom Pass. And we felt that if a few more had grown there in the 4 years. We made our way perilously over the debris left by snow slides, occasionally stopping to gasp at the wondrous beauty of the golden sunrise casting its pastel tint on a majestic Challenger Glacier. Incidentally, we were usually up at either 4 or 5 o'clock and early in the morning to get our hiking done in the cool of the day. We found that it was quite tricky getting around and over places where the trail had decided to slide down to the next switchback. And we thought we'd be glad to get off of the switchbacks and down into something different, you know, for a little variety. And then we got into the Devil's Club. Where the trail followed along the creek, it had completely grown over with berry bushes, nettles, Devil's Club, and vine maple. Devil's Club, I don't know if you people know it, but it's typical of our western Washington woods. And it's a rather heavy stalk. It can grow very tall, has big leaves, and everything about it has spines. And they're not just spines, but they're like fish hooks. And if you get snagged on it, it can tend to fester a little bit. At any rate, we came quite adept at stepping those big stalks down as we made our way through Devil's Club. When we hit the woods, the trail was covered with fallen logs, the ones we'd heard so much about. We hadn't really appreciated them until then. Many places we went through the fields of Devil's Club with the fallen logs at appropriate intervals just to make it interesting. Not most of the wooded stretches, were under 20 feet of down timber. Now, I'm not exaggerating this. We would climb up that stuff, and the only way we could get through sometimes, and we'd try to make a game out of it. You know, we'd go down 6th Avenue to Union, and then go down Union to 7th, and so on. And the one thing that helped us through, there were blazes high on the trees. And all of the old blazes apparently had come down. These were very fresh, had been put up, we figured, the winter before. They were at least 10 feet high. We knew a horse couldn't have gone through there, so it had to be a trapper or someone who was in there during the peak of winter when there was a great deal of snow on the ground. But whoever it was knew the area pretty well because we found these blazes close to the trail. I mean, sometimes we'd be way up here and we'd look down and say, hey, there's a piece of the trail down there. And there were other times when we got down and just simply crawled through. To make it interesting, my watch got wet in the brush and stopped. And I did get it started again, but we were never quite sure what time it was. And then one of our flashlight bulbs went out, and so we had only one flashlight to go with. So what? Trying to break through slashing, we would sort of, we'd use our hatchet when we had to in cutting down stuff that we could cut down, much of it we couldn't. And many times, as I said, we would simply get down and one would crawl through and then we'd push the sacks through and then the other would crawl through. And suddenly we came onto a cabin which we didn't expect to find. This was the Stillwell cabin. It hadn't been on the map. And we opened the door and then we closed it again very quickly. Whoever had been there, maybe that trapper had set the mousetrap, the kind that's the 5-gallon can, and then you build a little ramp up. You fill it with water, and you build a little ramp up, and you suspend a prune or something up, and you have a spool there, and when the mouse goes up the ramp and he reaches out and touches the spool, why, there he goes, kaplunk. Well, this had been working for a good 6 or 7 months. So we closed the door quietly and made our place to stay outside. The trail to that point was only supposed to be 6 miles from the pass. It had taken us between 8 and 9 hours to get there, and we were pretty good hikers, so it was really rough going. Our pedometer, I was wearing a pedometer, and it registered 10 miles, so we knew that was the time that it had taken us to go around, over, and under logs. The total mileage up to that point was 35 miles. And we discussed the possibilities ahead because we had come to forks of the trail, and one was to take the Big Beaver Trail and the other the Little Beaver. If we took the Big Beaver Trail, we would not have to worry about getting across the Skagit. And we didn't know how we were going to get across the Skagit. It's a pretty big river. But we decided to stick with the Little Beaver because everybody seemed to have recommended that. Well, the trail from here on now got even worse. For a little while, it was better, and we were much encouraged. And then it became almost impossible. We used every way imaginable in crossing logs, excepting somersaults. We went around, over, under, head first, feet first, sideways, crawling on our stomachs, sliding on our backs. We used our hatchets to cut our way through where it was most impossible, knocking off limbs so we could go over or under. We dragged, pushed our packs through the brush, places that seemed absolute barriers, and then we crawled on our stomachs. We expect to walk logs in our dreams, I said here. We were very adept at walking logs, all kinds, big, little, high, low, slippery, rolly, peeled 6-inch logs, any kind. Dot learned how to really cling with her caulks. And she says that now she knows how a fly can walk on the ceiling. We were looking for Perry Creek. And when we finally found it, it ran all over the countryside, but we found sort of a little island and made our camp out there. We were, again, very tired. It had again taken us 8 hours to cover 6 miles. We took 2 hours of rest to enjoy a dinner, and then decided that we would walk a little further. And cut off, we figured we've got another 6 miles to get out to the Skagit, and it's going to be as bad or worse. So let's walk while it's cool, because it had been very, very hot during the day. So after climbing over logs for about 20 minutes, we suddenly stopped dead in our tracks and stared at one another unbelievingly. One of us might be crazed by the heat, but both of us heard this distinctly. Through the silence, there came the rhythmic ring of an axe, only slightly muffled by distance. With new life, we flew over the remaining logs, scarcely realizing that they were in the trail, until at last we came in sight of our deliverer, for such he seemed, since it meant our trail was clear ahead. Our axe man looked more surprised than we were. Upon seeing two girls emerge from the bramble, he got the idea that the trail must be pretty clear up ahead of him. We lost no time in disillusioning him. We found only two fellows and a mule working on this end. They are to clear the Little Beaver Trail to Blackcomb Pass and back over the Big Beaver Trail, and the ranger expected them to get through in 2 weeks. We expected to take 2 years. We told them that when we got out, we'd send something in to the Stillwell cabin for their New Year's dinner. The fellows were camped on the base of a rock slide on the little plateau near the river, and several hundred feet below their camp, we found a comfortable spot for our bed among the Devil's Club. We have plowed through so much of it that we wouldn't feel natural without some near. The problem was I had slid down all over off of so many logs and so many trees. You know, we get up there, you've got to negotiate three or four trees to get down to the ground. And the seat of my pants were worn out by the time we reached these two fellows. And I didn't think of it until I was standing right in front of them. And this is when the bandana handkerchief came in very much. So, we wore that. The next morning we left the fellows and we went down that trail and we patted these logs that they'd cut out, you know, all the way, and we were so happy to have 6 miles of trail that was finally clear. And then we got down to the Skagit River, and it looked to us to be about a block across, and it was a log jam to cross on. And these were not logs that were piled up for us to clamber on. These were floating logs. And we made it. Well, we had to. So, when we got across the river, we found our way to the boundary guard station, which was, again, the last stop before you go into Canada, although it wasn't right on the boundary. It was a few miles south of the boundary. And this cabin looked pretty good to us. It had a great big wash tub hanging on the wall outside. Let's see, the roof above the stove had been repaired where a bear had cracked through the winter before, having sent bacon within. In back of the cabin, where the bear had approached, was a huge, queerly contrived bear trap. We couldn't quite decipher it. We saw a lot of deer and small game, and we decided to take a day off and really get ourselves cleaned up and go fishing. And of course, all I had was a hook and this string, this line. But the fish are such up there, I'll have you know, or were such, that you could do selective fishing. And I used a police whistle to for a sinker, you know, to hold the line down. And we caught fish. And some of those big bombers, I knew if they ever got a hold of my one and only hook, it would be a goner. And we wanted that hook to last the whole trip. And so I would have to pull my line out, you know, to let the big ones go by. And then we couldn't catch the little ones because we didn't want the little ones anyway. So we let those go by. It was a good thing that the water was quite clear because we could select the size we wanted and catch the fish. And we did catch fish, I'll have you know. And we did eat fish there. Of course, my first instructions were that from Mr. Pagner, as soon as we hit that boundary guard station, we were to telephone him. We were to telephone down to Diablo Dam and have them connect us through to Bellingham. He wanted to talk to us directly to find out what that trail was like. Well, I had plenty to tell him. And he said, "I told you so." So, the trip on down the Skagit was 21 miles, and we walked it in one day. After that, we were in good shape after we'd gone through that spot of pass country, you know. We really had a good workout. And it was beautiful country. The sad thing to me is that it's at the bottom of Ross Lake now, because that's all been dammed up in there since then. But it was beautiful, and coming around Diablo Lake, we dropped down then to Reflector Bar, where we picked up our mail, our next food supply, and looked for a store where I could buy some new slacks. Then we backtracked around Diablo Lake and went up Ruby Creek. We had an interesting visit with a couple who were doing some placer gold mining on Ruby Creek, and they fed us a meal of creamed venison and trimmings, and then took us over to show us their mine. We also the guard at Reflector Bar on Lake Diablo had tried to talk us out of going the granite because he said, well, that trail isn't open, there's down timber up there. And we said, when was it last open? Well, it was last opened last year. And I said, forget it, we're going to granite. And we had a reason for wanting to go that way. We knew about a guard that lived up there at the forks of where the granite comes into Ruby Creek that made fabulous pancakes. He said the batter was started in 1909, and we wanted to have this experience way back up there in the woods. So we hiked up there, and his daughter was living with him at that time, and she cooked the pancakes, and she was a very lovely person, and we enjoyed that visit. Then when we hiked up the granite, it was a cinch. There were a few logs over the trail, but really nothing much to it. Easy grade, and you know what we said to each other? We said, hey, you know, this is a good grade. This would be a good place to put a road. And then we laughed hilariously because we knew all the rugged country you'd come through before you'd ever get to that stretch. That's where the road is now, the North Cross State Highway. Oh, let's see, I'm going to jump ahead here a bit. I want to get you to this valley before the Vespers bell rings, so I'm sorry I have to skip all those pages there, because they're really fun for me to read. Came over Rainy Pass then, and down Bridge Creek, we climbed Stiletto Peak on the way, and that was a lovely experience because we had mountains in all directions, looking down on Twist Pass and many others, and looking across to McGregor, and we discovered that the lookout on McGregor had been watching us climb Stiletto with high-powered scope, and he had some kind of a bet up with the lookout on Stiletto as to whether we would make it or not. Never found out just the details of that. We went on down to Bridge Creek and found people there, and fishermen, and we also caught a ride there in a government truck down to Tustehican. Along the way, well, this particular truck picked up various things for people along the road, and one was a big can of cream, and after they would hit every bump, they would kind of stop to be sure the cream hadn't spilled, and they took a little side road that went off a ways, and stopped to pick up 7 boxes of high explosives. And they put those in beside the creams. And it was kind of an exciting ride the rest of the way into Stiletto. But when we got there, the cream had not spilled. When we arrived there, we hurried to the post office to get our last food supply that was mailed to us, and we did find letters, and we also found people who stopped us to ask lots of questions, and we had only 2 hours there because we arrived there at 12 o'clock noon, and we wanted to catch that 2 o'clock boat to get over to Lucerne, and so we were having a time getting away from the people and buying what supplies we needed, and I noticed it's penny postcards we bought in those days. And getting a few notes written and into the mail ourselves so that our family would know that we made it out to another point of civilization. Then we got on the Lady of the Lake and came across to Lucerne. At Lucerne we found the ranger first. We secured our needed information, discussed our trails, past and future. He assured us we would have no difficulty getting over the passes, good trails being open all the way, good cabins at appropriate intervals in case of bad weather. This was the first time that a fire permit hadn't been needed. We looked at this snapshot album, and then we headed for the Lucerne store to add a few things to our supply. Incidentally, we had bought 2 candy bars, I think, over in Stahika. Then we got to Lucerne and we bought 3 more candy bars and some pop. And the storekeeper got concerned and he made us promise we wouldn't buy any more until dinner. We went over to Gettysburg then, as it was called, which was the resort, and I renewed my acquaintance with Oscar Getty. I had met him about 4 years before. My mother and I had vacationed in there. And he had married since I had been there and now had 2 children. And we were made very comfortable and had dinner and ate fried chicken. And we kind of had a mental picture of a taxi meter going up, you know, as we were eating dinner, wondering what it was going to cost us. It only cost us 75 cents. Then we went to the campgrounds and selected a place to sleep and came back to the store. And then we learned that the road was complete now. The new road from Lucerne to the copper mine at Holden. And the people there at the resort, many of them thought that we should wait and ride up on the truck because the truck would come down every day and we should ride that 12 miles. Well, we wanted to know what time we would get there. Well, we'd get there about 1 o'clock, and that didn't sound so good to us. But the people, what was kind of funny was that they felt very strongly about some felt strongly that we should take that truck, and others felt strongly the girls should do what they want to do. They should not, you know, and they got into arguments among themselves. So we picked up our packs and took off and went to the woods, and we were going to sleep out in the campgrounds, but the lady who worked there for Oscar Getty insisted that we were to have a shower and clean sheets. She probably had reason for suggesting we have a shower. And Oscar Getty agreed to that, and so we did wind up in clean sheets that night. The next morning, we started out around 6:15 and walked up the road. We passed the mine truck about at 9 Mile Creek. And the road crossed over, it now goes under the tailings, right about 10 Mile Creek, crossed over, and it goes up the other side. And if you're standing anywhere out there on the other side of the street, looking up there, you can tell where that old road comes down from the top tailings. You can tell the trees below are second growth. The trees above are old growth. And there is kind of a line in there. The first time I came back up here in 1968, I went up to the mine and backtracked it down to where it finally disappeared under the tailings. It's down to across this bridge there at Copper Creek. But that's the way it went up. So we wound up there. There were no tailings like that. You see, the only tailings were up at the mine up there. There was no village. This was before Howe Sound had got that far, because you see, they weren't doing their main mining until 37 or 38, along in there. And I'm not sure when they built the village. We'd have to look in some other historians to find that. I presume that the people were living in Honeymoon Heights at that time. There were only a handful of miners there. The building that you now see just a foundation of, there's concrete base, that's closest to the main mine portal up there. That was the building where everything apparently was happening, the administration and whatnot. There were tracks laid from the mine portal out around that building. They were very friendly, very kind to us, and invited us to visit the mine. And I'll read just a little bit of that. What time have we got here? We reached the mine at 11 minutes after 10. We would not have time to explore it. And I go on about this, describing this building. One of the men obligingly conducted us through the mine. We were given miners' coats and hard hats to wear to protect us from rock fall, dripping water, and the cold. And then we were taken into the level where they were drilling a new tunnel. We climbed into an ore car, which slowly slid down the tracks into the tunnel. The first plunge into darkness sort of gave us goosebumps. We looked at the ceiling, solid rock. We silently prayed there would be no earthquakes for a while, and then mentally we went ahead. As some switching of cars was necessary, we climbed out and proceeded the rest of the way on foot, jumping water puddles and lengthening our stride to make the ties. At the end of the tunnel, we watched the mucking machine in action, a rather complicated affair, which was supposed to scoop up the muck and load it into the cars. And then after trying to, what am I saying here? At any rate, we listened to the explanation of what was going on. And eventually we went into, they took us into this little room that was on the left-hand side, and was large as that corner back there, I guess. It was a fairly small room. And there were only three or four miners in there, and they gave us a sack lunch. And we enjoyed visiting and talking with them. And then we were eventually ushered out. We wrote a few notes and to send back down as our last chance, we thought, getting some mail out. And then we, at 12 o'clock noon, we started out on the trail again. And this time we went up to Heart Lake. We decided not to stop at Heart Lake. It was warm and the flies were a bit bad. And we had initially thought, down from at Lucerne even, of going all the way into Lyman Lake. And so we decided to just keep on going. And we did. I'll read just a little bit of that. The long valley we were traversing was noticeably silent. Beyond the occasional hum of an insect, our own plodding steps were the only sounds. The U-shaped contour told us an ancient glacier had had a hand in sculpturing this ravine. The afternoon was getting warmer, and our trail a veritable trough of dust. Our thoughts trailed back to the warm, soapy shower of the night before. All for nothing. We were visibly dirtier, Dot in shorts, once white, now gray, legs once bare, now a solid mat of dust. Nor did my slacks afford any protection. Small clouds of powdered particles rose inside the pant legs just as easily, and the denim only helped rub it into the flesh more thoroughly. But our sense of humor seldom failed us. As we approached the upper area, we mistook an amphitheater. We thought we were getting to the lake, and it turned out that this particular area was an expansive bottom filled with timber, not water. So we carried on, and finally we came to a cabin. Chill air from the glaciers above crept down toward the lakes below. Suddenly before us loomed a cabin made of logs with a shovel tied to the chimney and cleats down the roof. Set in an open meadow by the side of the trail, we lost no time in entering. The cabin belonged to the Chelan Electric Company. Well constructed, window screens, clean, excellent stove, mouse traps, register, two built-in double bunks, massive chest, and windows that opened but remained screened. The first problem was the search for water. We found it 30 yards away. And we now noticed more interesting glacial rock structure above the cabin flanking North Star Mountain. Then we went to bed, did have a little problem with a mouse, but he finally went out the window. And then the next morning, consumed an enormous amount of oats. I felt like a horse. Left the cabin with regrets. Cleanest, most comfortable, and the best built mountain cabin we'd encountered so far. 300 yards up the trail was Lyman Lake, and then we also noted the cataract coming from the upper lake. And we hiked on up to Cloudy Pass, and could look back down and see the whole setting there of both the lakes. We climbed the two easy miles through the colorful meadow, rich with alpine flowers, to Cloudy Pass. Certainly it was gorgeous, never to be forgotten country. And of course we did picture taking. Our elevation up there was 6,500 feet. Finally spotted Glacier Peak as we moved on around, and we decided to take a shortcut to Sewell Pass at the base of a cliff there, and we discovered that where they had put the trail was not through the real pass. They put the trail 150 feet up above, so we got down to this pass and then found we had to do a little backpacking and angling in order to get back on the trail, because they apparently put the trail a little higher to give the view of people coming through. From there, of course, we continued on along Miner's Ridge for a ways and then dropped into the Sewell. We should have stopped. Actually, we should have spent more time in Cloudy Pass that time. We came back a few years later to redo some of it because we had gone through there in such a big hurry. Looking back on it, it seems like we were in a marathon because we went from Lyman Lake from Lucerne to Lyman Lake in one day, and then we went from Lyman Lake clear out to the Sewell on the next day. We got down to, we were looking for Sulphur Creek that 19th day. That was the 19th day of our trip. And it got dark on us, and we finally just found a wide place. We'd come onto a road 16 miles sooner than the map said we would. And we just found a place to spread out our sleeping bags. And when we got up in the morning, we were beside a cabin, and there was water and a stove. We could see it in daylight. And about 100 yards further on, here was the Sulphur Creek camp, a big camp with people, tents, and all kinds of things. And then who showed up but L.B. Pagter? And he took us down to the crossing, the ferry crossing, and flagged a car that was going to Bellingham. It was one of the Forest Service people, it was a map maker. Put us in that car, and that evening, much to our chagrin, we found ourselves back in Bellingham, Washington, and wondered why. And that's the story. Now, we've got just a few minutes if you have some questions. Yes?
Didn't you you see any bear at all in the whole time?
Yes, we saw a bear, but when we would see a bear, they would take off so fast. We really felt privileged if we could see one. I remember the closest I got to one was came around a bend, and a little cub was running up the trail in front of me, you know, and my impulse was to get my camera and take the picture. Dorothy grabbed me and she said, "Where's the mother?" So I stopped, and the bear little cub didn't like the looks of us. Looked back over its shoulder, and it took off into the timber. I'll tell you one bear story. Maybe we'll have time for that. It wasn't on this trip. It was on another trip. But I was in the lead on that one, and a bear came around the curve. And we had gotten so we never got off the trail for a bear, because when we met a bear, the bear would take off in such a hurry, we just kept walking, you know. So I just kept walking, and so did the bear. And then around came a little cub, and then around came another little cub. And I started going like this to Dorothy behind me, you know, just walking backwards, and stopped. And the cubs didn't like the looks of us, and they took off, and then the mother followed. So we stood there until we were sure they were well into the brush. And then we started on. And I hadn't gone very far, and when suddenly Dorothy just hit me a bang on the back of my pack, and she said, get going. And I started to run as much as you can run with 35 pounds on your back, you know, on a mountain trail. And when I was just completely dog-tired and out of breath, I didn't know what this was all about. Nothing had happened. The bear hadn't grabbed us. It should have caught up with us by now if it was the bear, you know. So I stopped, and I turned around, and I said, "What are we running for?" She was brushing off yellow jackets. Any other questions? Okay, we did many other long hikes. That was our shortest long backpack trip together. We did 200 miles in the Olympics, and our longest trip together was 276 miles in the Cascades. We later came back through Whatcom Pass, starting at the same place and doing... We had to see what the Forest Service did, because they did go in there and really clean that trail out and made a beautiful trail out of it. And then that time we headed up to the crest and took the crest trail. Oh, it wasn't built yet, but we got the Forest Service to show us where it was supposed to be. And there was always a trail in, you know. There would be 5 miles of good trail, and then it would run out, and you'd be on a game trail or a sheep trail or something like that. But then, of course, I met my husband, and he was an outdoors person too. And so we picked up on the backpacking, and there was one trip when the three of us and I, three of us together, traveled on one trip. Anyway, it was fun, and it's been fun relating this to you people. Thank you.